Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to episode 289 of Amazing Avenue Audio, the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore. Thank you for joining us this week for our All-Star Spectacular, or something like that. We're just happy to talk about something that isn't the current 2018 roster of the New York Mets. So first up, Chris McShane and I will speak about Jacob deGrom, Brandon Nimmo, and All-Star Games of Past.
Well, folks, we are recording this as Alex Bregman hits his first home run of the Home Run Derby. It's Monday night of the All-Star break. Chris and I are going to talk about some All-Star stuff in a minute, but some news fell into our podcast lap today, which was comments made by Jacob deGrom's agent, essentially saying that Jake wants to be a Met long-term, the Mets should sign him long-term. If they're not going to sign him, they should trade him. Now, this is some hot heat here, Chris. I think we're both going to be in absolute agreement about this, but do you think this is a pretty ballsy move for the agent to do on the eve of the All-Star game?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. But, yeah, no, there's some fortitude on display here, I think. You know, if you're looking to get him paid, or if you're looking to make something happen, either getting him signed to an extension by the Mets or getting him traded, I can't think of a better time to force the team's hand than right now. You know, the team is awful. They have one all-star. It's him. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now. And you just call them out the night before, the day, afternoon before the All-Star game, and say, hey, either pay him, and we've talked about this, and we're willing to do it, or trade him right now. And that's, you know, I love it. You know, put this team on the spot. Make them make a decision. You know, it just felt like it was something that nobody could force their hand, you know. We certainly can't when we write about it, and every column in New York sports can write about they should extend DeGrom, and I don't think they feel anything in terms of pressure to do something because of that. You know, so if that can't make it happen, if people not showing up to games because the team is terrible can't make it happen, you know, I love the player himself just kind of putting it on the line. And, you know, Brody Van Wagen didn't go out and say this without telling DeGrom that he was going to do it.
Right. That's a getting fired move if you don't clear it by your player.
Right. Yeah, no, if DeGrom hadn't approved going ahead with this, he wouldn't have. I mean, he followed up with quotes that were a little softer language and all that kind of stuff. You know, the player himself was kind of saying the right thing, as people like. But, yeah. He knew this was happening. They knew what they were doing, and good for them. You know, this is a guy who has been far more valuable to the Mets over the last few years than his pre-arbitration and arbitration years salaries have paid him. You know, this is a team that doesn't have any payroll obligation, literally, after the 2020 season. And even that season, it's not that much, but you know, you don't have to go that far out to get to a point that they have $0 on the books. You know, it's the only thing they could do to say we shouldn't do this is get some ridiculous haul of, you know, somehow three or four of the best prospects in the game, if you can even cobble that together from one, you know, one team. And guys who are, you know, either considered sure things or close to the major leagues or a combination of both, you know, like really, really blow people away. Maybe even get, you know, a major league player who's good and that level of prospect back. You know, if they were to pull that off, I think everybody would still hate them. But
yep.
But that's the only counter argument really to just paying DeGrom. And, you know, I don't know how much stock to put into the little tidbits that we get occasionally from, you know, some of the writers on the beat, but it doesn't sound like DeGrom is saying, I need you to sign me for 10 years and $300 million.
Right.
Um, you know, maybe they're wrong. Maybe he is making over the top long-term demands, but from what we have access to and what we hear from that, it doesn't sound like that's the case. It sounds like he just wants to be paid like he deserves to be paid, you know, for a long enough amount of time that he's all set.
Yeah, I mean, and look, not for nothing, and this is going to sound like a snide comment, but fuck it, whatever. Like, the guy wants to play for the Mets in 2018. That's a rare thing right now. This is a horribly managed team. This is a team that has thrown away every good opportunity presented to them consistently for years and years and years now, and he wants to still play for you. Like, that's got to be easier than convincing a new free agent to come play for you. So if you're thinking about replacing him in the free agent market, you're not going to be able to do it. There aren't pitchers as good as DeGrom. You're going to get as cheap as DeGrom who are going to want to come and play in the circus that is the Mets organization. So just right. From practical level, you have to take this as a good opportunity to sign this guy. As you said before, it helps them save face a little bit. You know, it's maybe a, you know, it's certainly not the only move the Mets need to do to be respectable, but it certainly goes a long way. It shows the fan base that you care. It shows Syndergaard and Conforto and other of your young core that you're serious about, you know, either possibly extending them in the future or at least building around them to give yourself a winning team for next season. It just seems like there's only three reasons I can think of that the Mets would not want to do this. Number one, like you said, he's making ridiculous claims that, you know, ridiculous demands that they don't want to meet. Number two, they legitimately feel that he is not as good or as durable as he's proven to be, which I cannot really imagine being the case, or they legitimately can't afford it / don't want to spend the money. And if that's true, that's the saddest of all.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's the thing. This sort of feels like a situation that David Wright was in at a time when, you know, he signed a deal that was pretty team friendly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know injuries can happen. That's a risk a team takes on. You know, I think people are extra paranoid about pitching injuries, you know, with the Mets, and rightfully so, given the way things have gone over the years. But I just don't know. I don't. Where are you getting this level of player? You know, I know plenty of fans soured on David Wright at some point, something that we disagreed with. But when you're retaining a guy who would have a shot, you know, if they signed him for 5 years, hypothetically, right now, he'd have a shot at playing out his entire career as a Met. And I feel like that's the kind of guy that if something went wrong in the last couple of years of the contract weren't, you know, looking so great, people are going to be more willing to forgive the guy who they loved for, you know, however many years, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, however many years before you get to that potential phase of the contract. And, you know, it, the way he pitches, I'm optimistic that he can stick around and be effective, you know, later than the average pitcher.
I agree with all of that.
You know, how many guys out there, like Harvey, Dickey won a Cy Young over Kershaw. And I know some people are like, oh, Kershaw clearly deserved it, you know, but hey, screw that. You know, Dickey went out there and had a hell of a season. I think his story helped him in that regard.
Absolutely.
And he was on that level. It wasn't like, oh, they gave it to a guy just because of his story and Kershaw was 100 times better. You know, there's a guy who went out there and pitched that well. But DeGrom right now, you know, how many pitchers have come around that you can say, oh, he is legitimately – not that Dickey was not legitimate, but he is without question better than Clayton Kershaw right now. You know, Kershaw obviously is a few years older than the last time that comparison came around. But, you know, you've had guys, Dickey, Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard at his best, who, you know, you're saying, all right, they're up there in that top tier, top 5-10 pitchers or whatever. But DeGrom showing you that he might be the best guy there is. And, you know, he's only 30. If we were talking about he's 34 and he wants an extension until he's 40, you know, that might be a different conversation. But he's 30. Signed him for 5 years. You're signing his age 31, 2, 3, 4, and 5 seasons. I don't think that's a bad thing, personally.
No, I don't either. So, I mean, to me, the million-dollar question here is, how seriously did this piss off the Wilpons and the Mets front office today?
Right, that is my concern. So I passionately want them to sign him to an extension, and I expect them to trade him, like, tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Somehow they'll trade him before the All-Star game, and he'll have to change uniforms and not wear the Mets uniform at the game tomorrow.
Right.
That'll be the most Mets move possible.
Yeah, it would be. And for, like, an underwhelming return.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll get him for Eric Young Jr. somehow.
But good for you, Jacob DeGrom. Good for your agent. You know, I'm glad somebody's kind of forcing the issue and putting them on the spot.
Yeah.
You know, because I had written about it on the site, you know, back in early June. You had the biggest story around the Mets was that they had cratered, and then, oh, they have these two pitchers and they should be Yankees, shouldn't they? And it was just like all you would hear about for the team for a week or 2 weeks, you know, whatever it was, that, oh, the Yankees got to trade for these guys and the Mets got to trade them to them and all this. And, you know, at that time I had written, take control of the situation, extend both of them, tell everybody else to, you know, screw off. These are your 1 and 2 in your rotation. We're paying them. That's the foundation of it all. And what you alluded to, you know, you have Nimmo, Conforto, and, you know, obviously Conforto has not been what we all had hoped this year so far, but, you know, you have these guys around and, you know, if they flourish, they know that they have these two aces at the top of the rotation. If you go out, and I know we're living in a dream world talking about somebody like Manny Machado, but if you were a franchise that was willing to, you know, try to woo that kind of player, you're never going to be alone in offering a lot of money. You know, players obviously want to take care of themselves and their families and get paid, and they well should, but they're competitive. That's the whole reason they got there. They're like hyper competitive people.
Right.
So, you know, if you need a tiebreaker in free agency, I think having shown commitment to guys like that can help you say, look, this is a team that's committed to winning. And, you know, when we get a guy who performs well or really well, we're willing to lock him up because that's somebody we don't want to lose.
It just seems crazy that we even have to have this conversation.
Yes. Yeah. So what if Jacob DeGrom goes, if everything goes completely awry, in 2021, you're paying him, you know, $25 million. So what? So what? Who else is what? DeGrom and Machado combined, you know, let's just say, are making $55 million. That should be 1/3 of your payroll at least at right. That point in time. Or at most, if I'm doing my fractional math here correctly.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we have no inside information or anything like that, but do you think that this deal gets done for the Mets and the Instagram eventually?
I don't know.
Or do you see this as a... Because, I mean, part of me thinks that the Wilpons... And again, like I know that we make the Wilpons out to be history's greatest monsters on this podcast sometimes, but, I mean, they are. But, you know, I could see a situation... Where they basically say, agents don't tell us how to run our team, and they don't trade him, nor do they sign him, and they just keep him until, is it next year his walk year?
No, two more.
Two more, yeah. Keep him until his walk year, and then trade him mid-season then.
Right. Well, yeah, and that's like one significant point here is that, you know, DeGrom and his agent are using the leverage of where he is and where the team is right now to try to, you know, maximize things for him. And they should. You know, if they just stay the course, they can't force the Mets to do anything, you know?
Yeah.
But putting this much pressure on them, that, I don't know. That's about as much leverage as you can get in the situation they're in right now.
Yeah. So do you think it happens or no?
Ultimately, no. Being a Mets fan, I don't know. If you talked to me 6 months ago or a year ago and everything else was the same and we were asking the same question, I'd probably say, yeah, they'll get it done. And, you know, if I'm going to just argue with myself a little, everybody said no way they would get Cespedes to come back
right.
The first time or the second time, and they did make it happen. But it's so rare that they have somebody who has this extreme talent and has had great success with their own team. You know, it's one thing to say, I don't know who to use as an example here, but it's one thing to look at a guy on another team and go like, oh, wow, look at the stats that he puts up and all that. You know, and between data and scouts and all that, they should be able to reach a conclusion anyway. But I don't care how involved you are as a general manager. You're going to see more of your guy, you know?
Right.
So when you have a guy on that level that has been around and you've seen him just be the difference maker and be this great player, you would like to think that would give you that extra push to say, you know, we have to keep him in the organization. So,
yeah, I don't think they're going to sign DeGrom. I think they're going to sign Syndergaard to the long-term deal, which I think is a less wise move based on his injury history. Not that I'm saying he'll be injured forever, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
It's to me, DeGrom is a safer bet than Syndergaard for a long-term deal. Even though he's a little bit older, it just seems to me like it makes a little more sense for DeGrom. But I feel like for the Wilpons, they love the marketing that comes with DeGrom, with Thor. You know, every season since he's come up, there's been a lot more Thor merchandising and marketing there has been for DeGrom. And I'm sure part of that is personality, but part of that I think is just the Mets' perceived bankability of those players. And so I think they're going to invest the money in Syndergaard instead of DeGrom, whereas they should unquestionably do it for both.
Right, yeah. Yep.
It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy, kind of sad. But DeGrom is an all-star, and we should talk about the all-star game a little bit. First of all, are you a fan of the all-star festivities?
Overall, yeah, still, but I don't know. This is like a very unenthusiastic endorsement of them. there's fun stuff to it. But tonight, as we record, for instance, I'm not watching the Home Run Derby. It's kind of been take it or leave it for me. It's always more interesting if the field is a little more appealing.
Yeah.
In this case, it's like almost half National League East, no Mets.
There's literally one AL player in it.
Yeah. And, all right, cool, whatever. But if I'm just being straight up objective baseball fan, I want to see... And I it pains me to say this about the two of them, but I want to see like Stanton and Judge and Jose Ramirez, and I want to see Trout, obviously. Yeah. I want to see guys who are just prolific power hitters. So that doesn't appeal to me as much. The Futures game is actually pretty interesting. And obviously I didn't watch it.
Interesting enough to talk about, not interesting enough to watch.
I mean the Mets led me to a path where for the first time ever I really like watched the World Cup. So I went out and watched the World Cup final at a bar and had a nice brunch soccer experience. and then stayed out a little bit past that. So the Futures game
Jeff
just sort of
never
happened.
Left the show.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a fun ride. I don't know that I'm going to watch another game anytime soon, but
match.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I speak appropriately about rugby stuff.
Oh, okay.
But with soccer stuff, I'm like stubborn. I'm intentionally calling it what I want to call it.
Right.
Like, it's not extra time. It's overtime.
The fact that you even call it soccer just proves that. So.
Well, yes. Yeah. So no, don't worry. I'm still like an annoying American about soccer in some ways.
Okay.
So don't worry about that. But yeah, so I didn't watch the entire game or anything, but when I saw a million tweets about Peter Alonso hits a home run that like the
broke
combination
broke stat cast. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, the combination of velocity and
it was like launch angle, distance, and velocity that had never been recorded.
Yeah. And just as a quick aside, you know, I feel like those numbers are fascinating and I like seeing them. But from a marketing standpoint, they should just call it like hit velocity.
Yeah.
Trajectory. Although I guess that's probably too difficult for people to say all the time, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you went with more scientific, well, in the trajectory case, like a more scientific sounding term, I feel like it wouldn't have announcers making lame jokes about launch angle all the time.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, see, I have a real soft spot for the Home Run Derby. The first one I remember watching was one of the, I believe two that Ken Griffey Jr. won in the late 90s, wearing his hat backwards, which was considered, you know, incredibly controversial at the time that, a player would wear his hat backwards during an official baseball activity like the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, and, very, very serious operation.
Exactly, yeah. And I sort of fell in love with it then. And I know it's dumb, I know it's bad, but it's like, to me, it's the fast food of sports. Like, you know, it's everybody loves a home run, so let's give you, you know, 195 were hit last year during the Home Run Derby. You know, it's totally dumb, but I have a soft spot for it. I love the idea of the All-Star Game in general, but I feel like the All-Star Game... I'm one of the few people who I don't want it to matter. I don't want it to have any major consequences. I don't want it to go into crazy extra innings like it did a couple of years ago. I don't want any of that. I want it to be a fun game, you know, for the sake of being a fun game. But, you know, both you and I are old enough to remember when the All-Star Game was the only time outside of the World Series in spring training that you saw, you know, Mets and Yankees face each other. That you
right.
saw AL and NL matchups, and that made it really special. I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, pre-interleague play, watching, you know, just, you know, Roger Clemens pitch to Barry Bonds, you know, Randy Johnson
yeah.
pitching to John Kruk. Like, those things seemed really novel and really unusual at the time, and now there's an interleague play, there are none of those matchups that seem nearly as, you know, magical as they did then. So I think that has taken away a lot of my All-Star Game luster. But it's funny. I just saw on Time Hop told me today that 2 years ago, I guess it was, I tweeted, like, you know, that I'm sure that the Major League Baseball players appreciate the extra day of the All-Star break, but God, is it the worst for the fans to have to go another day without baseball. And this year, I'm like, oh, thank God, we have almost a whole week without baseball.
I have four nights without the Mets.
Yeah, it gives me some time to do some enjoyable stuff in my life. You know, it's crazy how the difference in how your team is doing will determine how you feel about the All-Star break at this point. But you know, I think it's going to be cool to see DeGrom pitching the All-Star game. You know, again, any opportunity to remind the world at large that DeGrom is the best pitcher in baseball right now is an opportunity I think people should relish. It's always fun to see people do fun stuff. It's nice to see the Mets recognize, you know, a Met player recognized. But I think we'd both probably feel a little bit better about the case if Brandon Nimmo was on the team as well.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, I know he slumped a little bit over the last couple of weeks coming into the All-Star break, but that wasn't really a factor in the roster decision. You know, that stuff was pretty much all decided before then. So, you know, he goes out and has one hell of a first half. You know, the numbers are down a little bit right now, but he's still been one of the better hitters in the game. Certainly one of the better hitting outfielders in the game. You know, you look by weighted runs created plus, my metric of choice, I guess, for hitters. And
mine as well.
You know, he's up there among qualified outfielders. He's seventh with 139. At the time these decisions were made, he was even higher on the list. But, you know, he's up there with the likes of, you know, above Matt Kemp and Nick Markakis and Giancarlo Stanton, you know, Schwarber. You know, I'm not 100% sure that each one of these guys is an all-star, but, you know, just going on names that get that kind of hype, you know, a little bit behind Benintendi. And then, you know, not quite, he fell out of that tier where he was up with Betts, Trout, JD Martinez, and Aaron Judge, which the fact that he was in it for a while.
I was going to say, you're burying the lead here. He was in that conversation.
Right. So, yeah. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a shame. I know the fact that the team is bad doesn't help, but that isn't really what the game's supposed to be about. And it's hard for me to look at a guy who, you know, he's sitting on a really nice stat line at the break and, you know, a deserving all-star to be in that tier with the number of outfielders that make the all-star game roster between, you know, the two leagues combined. And that's the other thing. When you look at the league, everybody ahead of him on the qualified chart is in the American League. And so are the first and second players behind him, you know? So right. If you narrow, if we're talking all-star game, you know, the league matters, obviously.
Yeah.
And in this case, you have the best hitting outfielder in the National League isn't on the all-star team. So, you know, all-star game snubs happen all the time, and I know, you know, people think sometimes it's silly to overreact to them, but what else do we have this year?
Well, yeah, and not only that, to me, the bigger crime here is the way that the all-star ballot is put together. Because Nimmo wasn't a starter when the year began, he wasn't listed on the official all-star game ballot, but Jay Bruce was.
Right, and we've moved to a digital ballot.
Exactly. There's no reason. This isn't me getting like a 2003 ballot at PNC Park when I was in college and seeing Mo Vaughn's name on there for the Mets. Like, this isn't, you know, this is a time when you can adjust it as it goes along. There's no reason for Adrian Gonzalez to, wasn't he on the ballot? I think Gonzalez was on the ballot.
And, yeah, I think so.
And Nimmo wasn't. You know, that's insane. There is simply no reason for that. It's that's what it's more offensive to me than him not getting voted in. And then the fact that, you know, he was not put on by the coaching staff, again, just seems, it seems so dumb. And this goes to the sort of weird dual nature of the All-Star game. It's supposed to, quote, matter, but it doesn't really matter. But some managers manage like it's the most important game in the world, and others manage like it's a scrimmage. So if you're not going to play the guy, what's the harm in naming him to be an all-star? Or if you want to win the game, wouldn't you want to have the National League's best outfielder on your team? And I can't see a reason to not have him on the team.
Yeah, same here. You know, I mean, star power is, I guess it is the all-star game. So, you know, I get that is a factor here, but you know, Brandon Nimmo has unquestionably been a better player this year than Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
One of them will be around because of his name and his track record over the, you know, the course of his career. But yeah, no, it's pretty lame.
I hate when people pull that all-star, routine, and I'm not saying you were doing it. I know you were saying that in jest,
but, right.
You know, this is like the coworker of mine who claims that Jose Canseco belongs in the Hall of Fame because he's one of the most famous baseball players. And if they wanted to call it the Hall of Great, they should have, but they call it the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a take someone has.
Yeah.
That's a bad one. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
Well, let's look back at some All-Star Game memories that we have involving the Mets that we appreciate. I know when we were chatting earlier today about this, we both mentioned the Harvey and Wright at Citi Field All-Star experience. Did you happen to go to that All-Star Game?
No, the only thing I went to was the... I went to the Home Run Derby. I did not go to the game. Yeah, I mean, the game was just astronomically expensive.
Yeah.
So yeah, I didn't go to that. So, but when I look back, well, were you at that game?
I was not. No. I had kids, dude.
But, well, hey, you never know. You might be able to afford several extra tickets to the most expensive exhibition game on the planet.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, so funny enough, you know, Harvey's performance is up there for me. And you know, I hate to, you go back and look, 2006, the National League lost, but Carlos Beltran and David Wright were pretty much, you know, almost the entirety of the National League's offense.
Yep.
You know, so that was kind of a cool thing.
And that was a big deal at the time. That I feel like that was Wright's coming out party on the national baseball scene.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So, you know, that combination of those two, and if I'm ranking, like, favorite Mets, both of them are in the top five for me. So it's weird, you know, to frame it this way, but the pitching performances for me, the Harvey in 2013 and DeGrom in 2015, those were the things that stood out the most. DeGrom 2015, I think, is if I'm picking one performance, that's probably my favorite because it was just so ridiculously good.
Wasn't it something like 12 pitches and 3 strikeouts?
10.
Oh my goodness. I was
10 pitches, struck out the side.
I was underselling that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's something you could just go back and watch and all that, you know, over and over again. And the results of the game, I don't care about either, whether or not the league wins. But just that, you know, pure fire of him going up there against some of the best hitters on the planet and just making them all look foolish, you know, that to me is number one.
That was pretty great. I forgot about the 06 game, and see, just mentioned that, but that was a big deal. I think the game at Citi Field just, it felt like the Mets were, they weren't quite there yet, but they were a team that was building momentum. And to showcase their, you know, at the time, excellent third baseman and excellent starting pitcher, it just felt like a moment where maybe people started to take notice of the Mets again.
Yeah.
Even though it obviously wasn't for real. Oh, man, Bryce Harper is wearing so much red, white, and blue right now. It's disgusting. He's wearing an American flag compression sleeve, and he's wearing a bandana that is red and white striped.
All right, that's, yeah, hey, good for him.
Yeah. So my last question for you, Chris, is there any All-Star Game memory from when you were a kid watching the Met in the All-Star Game, or, you know, even just the pre-David Wright era that you recall fondly?
I mean, I have like a general fond memory of, you know, like watching the All-Star game with my dad, you know, in terms of a specific performance though, I don't know.
I mean, to be fair, both of us grew up around the same time, which were pretty lean years for the Mets.
Yeah. You know, and all my favorite Piazza memories are from games that counted. Like, did he ever do anything big in an All-Star game? If so, the answer, I'm still not remembering it right away. So
I think he might have as a Dodger.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously he was a frequent All-Star.
Yeah.
But I don't remember any, like, badass, you know, Trevor Hoffman or Mariano Rivera early in his career comes in to save the All-Star game, and Mike Piazza's, you know, taking him deep and, you know, hitting a walk-off for the National League. No, nothing along those lines.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't either. I was actually reflecting on this today, how, you know, growing up, my my favorite player was not a Met. My favorite player was Ken Griffey Jr.
And, okay.
You know, I mean, again, I'm of a certain age when Ken Griffey Jr. was God to baseball fans. And so I have a bunch of memories, fond memories of watching Griffey in the All-Star game. There's a great moment that I sort of referenced before that I don't know if you're going to remember, with Randy Johnson pitching to John Kruk, and the ball, like, sailed over Kruk's head.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes.
And then he stood pretty much outside the batter's box for the rest of the at-bat. Yeah, I remember that really well. I think in that same All-Star game, somebody hit a ball that, like, on a line drive that got stuck in the pads of the outfield wall.
Ha!
So it's like little things like that when you're a kid, you know, those are the coolest things in the world to watch. But I don't know if there's any particular Met moment from the All-Star game as a kid that stands out to me. Which is kind of crazy that I don't remember any, but there we go. And Bryce Harper just moved on to the next round. So,
boo.
Yeah. Let's rank this, okay? Would you be more mad if Bryce Harper was a Met, or if Bryce Harper, not more mad, that's the wrong word, you want the Mets to win. Would you want the Mets to sign Bryce Harper in this fictional world where the Mets sign baseball players?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Okay. So you would love his antics if he was a Met?
Oh, of course.
Okay, cool. I want to make sure we're on the same page here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would still think, like, he's probably a pretty lame guy, but in terms of, like, pissing off everybody else, yeah, I'd be all in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not a Bryce Harper hater. I don't want him to win.
Yeah, I agree. Harper seems like the type of guy who, like, he seems like the cautionary tale that didn't go cautionary. Like, you shouldn't be cocky. You should be humble, and you should do whatever. And, like, Harper seems like the guy we all went to high school with who was the best athlete on the team and knew it. And everybody was trying to get him to, like, slow down and not be the sort of ego monster that he was. And Harper seems like he was that kid but never really took the step back. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me.
That's a clown opinion. Sorry.
Bro, yes.
Yeah, bro, sorry. Oh, boy. Well, let's go Jake in the All-Star game. And I guess let's hope for either a really good second half or a really bad second half. Because a really bad second half means they'll sell off some players and maybe rebuild a little bit.
Right.
And a really good second half would just be fun to watch. Even if it led nowhere, it'll be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And they're not so far out that it couldn't be interesting later. They're not going to do anything, but it would at least, it would give us false hope for a while.
Yeah, no, it would be a whole lot of fun if they won 10 games in a row again, and, you know, it's not happening. But if they did, of course it would be fun. So, yeah, sign me up for either of those things. Sign me up for, you know, the young players getting legitimate playing time. Let's see what Pete Alonso looks like at the major league level. Let's see what Jeff McNeil looks like at the major league level. Let's have Ahmed Rosario start every game. You know, stop just messing around.
Yeah. Yeah. The crazy thing is that the Mets could sell off a number of players like your Cabreras and even your Fraziers or whatnot. We've talked about this before. But
right.
And they give some of these young guys legitimate playing time, and they might have a better second half record than they did with those players in the first half.
Yeah.
That's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, definitely not. And, you know, especially if they keep the pitchers and all four of them, you know, have, I think, been, DeGrom's been his own beast, obviously. Yeah. But the other three have been encouraging.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
And it seems like Jason Vargas might just pitch for the Cyclones now.
Hey.
If only. If only.
Seriously.
Hello, Mason Avenue listeners. Allison McCaig here with another rendition of the Nimometer and the DeGrometer, where we follow our two favorite Mets right now, Brandon Nimmo and Jacob DeGrom. It's been a couple weeks since I brought you one of these segments because I was on vacation last week. So I will give you 2 weeks' worth of stats to catch you all up on Brandon Nimmo and Jacob DeGrom's latest progress. So as far as Brandon Nimmo goes, he's actually been struggling the past 2 weeks, as many of you probably know. He's been mired in his first real slump of the season since getting hit in the hand with a pitch and missing a couple of days. Over his last 2 weeks, he's had 50 plate appearances and hit to a 75 WRC plus with 7 hits, 8 walks, and 4 RBIs. But last night, he hit a walk-off 3-run homer and was once again the happiest man in baseball. It was an amazing moment, and here's hoping that it is a breakout moment for Nimmo and he goes back to being closer to himself. It was wonderful to see his smiling face running around the bases. It was just great. So overall on the season, he's had 293 plate appearances, hit to a 147 WRC+. He has 13 home runs, 29 RBIs, 47 runs scored, and 7 stolen bases. He's been worth 2.6 Fangraphs WAR and 2.3 Baseball Reference WAR. Unfortunately, Brandon Nimmo was not selected for the All-Star game, even for the final ballot, despite being third among outfielders in FWAR and leading NL outfielders in WRC+. So I think, and I think many Mets fans think that this was a snub. You know, he doesn't have the counting stats that other guys have, that old school types rely on, that the players and the fans that vote often rely on to judge these players. His batting average is not as eye-popping as some others. So unfortunately, this means that he was not selected. But maybe he'll replace someone who is injured. We shall see. So more on that to come. But for now, Brandon Nimmo is not an all-star, unfortunately. But Jacob DeGrom is an all-star. That was obviously a foregone conclusion. But if the game were anywhere except Washington, D.C., he would probably be starting the all-star game. But alas, Max Scherzer is probably going to start for the National League. And Mickey Callaway had some choice words about that last night, saying that there was, quote, no doubt in his mind that Jacob DeGrom should start the all-star game and that any other choice would be, quote, the wrong decision. And I have to agree with Mickey Callaway there, obviously, but I can't get too angry. Max Scherzer deserves to start in front of his home crowd, but you know, Jacob DeGrom has obviously been the best pitcher in the National League, and there's pretty much no question about it. Last night, he showed that once again by shutting out the Phillies for 8 innings. And once again, he walked away with a no decision. But obviously, Nimmo's aforementioned walk-off homer secured the victory for the Mets. DeGrom gave up just 5 hits and 1 walk and struck out 7 in the outing last night. His past 2 weeks overall, he's had 22 innings pitched to a 1.64 ERA. His previous start to this one went much like last night's did, where he pitched 8 shutout innings again, struck out 8, and walked away with a no decision again, but the Mets walked it off again in the 9th inning with a grand slam from Jose Bautista. These back-to-back 8-inning starts are coming off of back-to-back starts in which he went only 6 innings and gave up 3 runs in each. So DeGrom hit what could be described, I guess, as a little bit of a snag for him, but he is obviously judged on a different curve than everybody else, quite frankly. But DeGrom is back to his usual self now, going 8 innings and shutting out teams, but obviously he's not earning any wins for it, unfortunately, because the Mets aren't scoring any runs for him, as usual. So on the season, DeGrom is up to 123 and a third innings pitched, and he has a 1.68 ERA, which is first in baseball by a pretty healthy margin. The next closest is Verlander at a 2.05 ERA, so DeGrom has the lead by almost 0.4 now in the ERA lead. He has a 2.3 FIP on the season and a 0.97 WHIP on the season. His 4.4 Fangraphs WAR are fourth in baseball, and his 6 Baseball Reference WAR are first in baseball. 6 WAR. Come on. Ugh, wow. Jacob DeGrom is having a Cy Young caliber season. It remains to be seen whether he will be in contention for the Cy Young given his low win totals, but I think, you know, it's hard to talk about the Cy Young and not talk about this season that DeGrom has had. It's been pretty incredible to watch, and pretty much the only good thing about the Mets, along with Brandon Nimmo's smiles, which are back now, so that's great. So I will be in your earbuds soon with another rendition of the Nimmometer and the DeGrometer.
Hey everybody, this is Steve Saipa, and I'm back to go over our minor league players of the week. And we just finished week 13 now, which is July 1st to July 7th. And the Las Vegas 51s went 4-4, which puts them at 42-47 for the season. Binghamton Rumble Ponies went 4-3, and are now 42-44 for the year. St. Lucie Mets went 3-3 and had 2 rain postponed games, and that puts them at 6-8 for the second half. The Columbia Fireflies went 2-5 this week and are 7-9 for the second half. Brooklyn Cyclones went 1-6 and they're now an even 500 with an 11-11 record. Kingsport Mets went 2-4 and they had a rain postponed game and they are 9-7 on the season. And finally, the GCL Mets, they went 4-2 and are 11-6 for this season. So our pitcher of the week this week is Brooklyn Cyclones right-hander Jason Valera. He started one game this week, pitching against the Aberdeen Ironbirds, and he allowed 2 runs on 5 hits, walking 1 and striking out 8. So after playing professionally in Venezuela, the Mets signed Valera to a contract in November 2015, and they signed him to the Dominican Summer League, and he spent a year there, and he made his stateside debut last year. He got assigned to the GCL Mets, and in 62 1/3 of an inning, he posted a 1.88 ERA, walking 17 and striking out 56. He led the GCL Mets in numerous categories, including ERA, strikeouts, WHIP, and innings pitched. And as a result, he was named a GCL All-Star at the end of the year. So he didn't really let the promotion to Brooklyn get to him or anything. And in 4 starts this season, he has a 1.86 ERA. He's walked 8 guys and he struck out 25. He just turned 21, so he's about the right age for the New York Penn League, but the Mets might want to consider accelerating the track that he's on, because between his performance last season and then how he's doing this year so far, it looks like short season ball isn't exactly challenging him. His fastball is heavy, and he gets plenty of ground balls, and that limits home runs, and his changeup, which is his best secondary pitch, is pretty advanced for his age and his level, and he gets a lot of swings and misses with it, and he also gets a lot of weak contact with it. Now, Christian James was tapped as the Cyclones' opening day starter, and at least on paper, he's quote-unquote the ace of the staff. But I've seen James not once, not twice, but 3 times so far this season, and none of that except for opening day was planned. It all just kind of worked out that way. But he's not the most impressive pitcher on the Cyclones' rotation. That guy is Valera. Not to get on a tangent or anything, but based on his stats and how the Mets are selling him, I think we all had big expectations for James, and like I said, having seen him, he's been a bit disappointing to say the least. Not just with his numbers, which are okay, not great, but okay, but just in general, the pitcher that he is, his stuff, the whole package. But anyway, back to Valera now. He's still pretty young, and he's just as likely to flame out next week, you know, as he is to develop into something really good. So, you know, based on his stuff and the numbers and everything, I wouldn't put him in my top 25, but he's a player to keep an eye on, you know, maybe in the 30 to 40 range if we did rankings that far. And now the hitter of the week, and that individual is Las Vegas 51's second baseman, Jeff McNeil. He was 10 for 26 this week with 2 doubles, a triple, 2 home runs, 9 RBI, 4 walks, and 2 strikeouts. So I'm not really sure what there is to say about McNeil anymore. He's hitting the hell out of the ball, and he has been for some time. It's not a mirage, it's legit, and at some point the Mets have to call him up and see how much of that can translate at the MLB level. There's a lot of dead weight on the Mets' 40-man roster. There's guys like Marcos Molina, Drew Gagneau, Jose Reyes, Kevin Kaczmarski, Ty Kelly. And then when you factor in the fact that Mets are probably going to trade Asdrubal Cabrera at the deadline, so there'll be plenty of time for McNeil. His best position is second base, so if they trade Cabrera, perfect timing. He could also play third, so depending on the status of Todd Frazier and Jay Bruce, you could mix and match all those guys at first and third. But the point is that there is going to be room for Jeff McNeil in a couple of weeks, and there will be enough playing time to get him on the field with some regularity and see how he does. And we haven't exactly gotten encouraging signs from the Mets' brass that they're going to be doing that, but they really need to. A season like this, where nothing is really happening, and honestly, at least from my perspective anyway, doing bad is better. But a season like this, now is the time to see what the young players can do. And because McNeil has been so good this season, he's actually forcing me to kind of amend how I pick players of the week. Normally it's very cut and dry. Whatever hitter has the best numbers of the week is the hitter of the week. And same thing with pitcher. But this is the second consecutive week now where McNeil is hitter of the week. And it's the 4th time overall this season. And from here on in, I'm just limiting the amount of times that a player could be player of the week to just 4 times. Which means that McNeil could literally never make an out from tomorrow until the end of the season, but he's ineligible. I'm just running out of things to say about him. You know, things to analyze, angles to make discussions about. Plus, there's 9 teams from the DSL to the PCL, and that's like almost 200 players in the system. And there's nothing wrong with recognizing when a guy's having a great season. But one of the things I like about this segment is just kind of talking about some of those lesser-known guys that people don't really know. Looking back on my list from last year, Jay Jebs was a hitter of the week. Rigoberto Terrazas was a hitter of the week. Anthony DeRossi was a hitter of the week. And on the pitcher side, there was Gabby Yanes was pitcher of the week. Yes Ocampo was pitcher of the week. Jose Moreno was pitcher of the week. I like when people know the ins and outs of the system. The more knowledgeable people are, the better the discussions are. And the better the discussions are, the more enjoyable they are. So in his honor, I'm going to call it the McNeil Rule. And according to the McNeil Rule, a player who is player of the week more than 4 times is now ineligible. Peter Alonso is the next closest to being made ineligible under the McNeil Rule. He was hitter of the week 3 times now. So if he gets hot and has one more hitter of the week honors to his name, it's his last. And looking at pitchers, Justin Dunn and Chris Vile were both pitchers of the week twice. So they've both got 2 more times before they become ineligible. And hopefully they both become ineligible, because that means that they've both been putting up good numbers. So those are our Mets Players of the Week for Week 13. And I'm Steve Saipa, and I'll be back with Players of the Week next week on Amazing Avenue Audio.
Well, folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue Audio. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. We did get an email this week, but we did not get to it because it didn't really fit with our theme, and we felt like it would be, you know, 99% relevant next time. So, sorry about that, but I promise we'll get to it next time. But you can always email the show, podcast@AmazingAvenueAudio.com, though that email address will be changing soon. But for now, podcast@AmazingAvenueAudio.com. You can also find the show, obviously, at Amazing Avenue, where you can find lots of other really, really great Mets stuff. We've had some really cool articles this week, sort of looking back at the first half, looking at Jacob deGrom, Brandon Nimmo. We have an article going up in a day or two about Dominic Smith. There's a lot of good stuff there. I really hope you guys are checking that stuff out, because I love what our writers contribute, and I'm proud to be a part of the site. You can also find Amazing Avenue on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can get this show from blogtalkradio.com, from Stitcher, from Apple Podcasts, from wherever you get podcasts, really. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Those things really do help. And you can follow all the contributors today on Twitter. I am at Brian Needs a Nap, Chris is at Chris McShane, Allison is at Petite PhD, and Steve is at Steve Saipa. So next week starts the second half, the unofficial second half of baseball, and let's just hope for some more watchable games. I think that's a pretty fair hope. And so, until next time, let's go Mets.